Hello, I'm Mark. Excuse me. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you all with us. Before we jump into our program, let's talk about this day in history, as we do here on this program. This was a day in 1914 that the great Billy Eckstein was born, one of the great jazz singers. We'll hear some of him during the course of these 2 hours in our breaks, and hear the mellifluous voice of Billy Eckstein. This was a day that the First Crusade happened in 1099. Where 15,000 soldiers, Christian soldiers, marched in procession around Jerusalem. And it was a time when people forget in that point in history where a huge massacre took place after that, where thousands of Muslims and Jews were slaughtered in the streets of Jerusalem in the name of Jesus. And I think that people always like to take those who lead their way spiritually and turn them around what they really mean. That was one of the first episodes about that. This was the day in 1876 when a white supremacist led a battle that killed five black men, Republican leaders, in Hamburg, South Carolina. It was the beginning, in the midst of the terror, when the racist white supremacists were reclaiming the South, and with the help of the presidency in the North, to end Reconstruction. This was also the day that in 1954, something we should remember because it's a huge day in American international history. On July the 8th, 1954, the United States overthrew Guzman, who was the elected leader of Guatemala, of Jacobo Arbenz Guzman, because they said he was a communist, he was a people's leader. That began the whole opening of the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, to kind of overthrow governments that we didn't like in America. And that was the beginning of what happened in Latin America over the next 60 years. In terms of disruption and chaos. This was the day in 1765 that Roy Wilkins became the head of the NAACP. This was also the day in 2012 Ernest Borgnine died. In 1972, a song hit the charts, which we'll hear later, Bill Withers, Lean on Me, that became a hit for months and months at the top of the charts. And we'll hear a little bit of that. Bill Withers was one of the big songs with my kids in my house back in the day. This is also, let me say to our Muslim brothers and sisters, happy Ramadan begins today, the holiest time of the year for our Muslim brothers and sisters. So we wish everyone an easy fast and a good contemplative day. We should do that with them and do what we can, if we are not Muslim, to spend time with our Muslim brothers and sisters breaking the fast together. So have an easy fast. We're joined here in studio by Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, community activist, and good to have you back in the studio. It's been a while. Heber Brown, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark.
Hassan Giordano is back in the house, host of Reporters Roundtable, publisher of DMVDaily.com. Hassan, welcome. Good to see you again, brother.
Always a pleasure.
Rhonda Wimbish is with us once again, real estate broker, legislative chair for the Real Estate Brokers of Baltimore, and a former candidate for the city council in the 6th District. And Rhonda Wimbish, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page and bring us your ideas to the table or tweet us at Mark Steiner. We're going to cover this 300, which turned to be almost a 600-man or more march to place Friday night on North Avenue around violence in our communities. We will look at rec centers versus police and strategies for the future in terms of the articles that came out in The Sun, Harbor Point Development, and more. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's talk about this march. And, folks, we'd love to have you join us. If you are among the men on that march, we'd love to hear from you at 410-319-8888. Bobby Marvin Holmes, one of our producers, was on that march, a very inspirational march, went from Hilton to Milton and back again down North Avenue. They called for 300 men, and it turned out to be 600 men at least who marched down North Avenue. And as Bobby said, this is not a black man's march. It was a man's march. Not too many white men showed up, but that's because I think it wasn't pushed in the white community, which we have to do to make this a march of all men in our communities to say no to the violence and let's do something to change what's going on out there. But if you were there, we'd love to hear your thoughts. 410-319-8888. Heber Brown, let me start with you. I don't know if you were there or not, but we were all kind of out of town. But your thoughts?
Yeah, just encouraged by the effort, and certainly kudos to the organizers for the march. I've been blessed to be a part of similar events in the past, and I think while none of them are a cure-all, They all have a place and a role in helping to focus and organize energy around these very important issues. I pray that with the great turnout and energy that Friday night's event had, I pray that if even just a fraction of that energy translates into becoming even more organized in various areas of redress and advocacy, I think it'll make a difference. If even just a fraction of that energy, if you can march from 7 to midnight, from Hilton to Milton and back,
right,
that is a sign of some dedication, and I pray that translates into other areas in the days, months, and years to come.
Rhonda, a woman's perspective on this man's march.
I think it's great. You know, I think that anytime we get together on one accord, it's good. You know, is it going to resolve the problem? I think you got to start with the police department and what's happening inside the police department before the problem is resolved. But for black men to come out, and that's where the crime is in the black community, you know, so that's probably why white men weren't there, because there's no crime in the white communities except for maybe a couple of, you know, stolen bikes or something. But
a little more intense than that, but yeah, but I hear what you're saying. Yes.
So, you know, the crime is in the black community, and for black men to come out, and, you know, we do see an absence of black men in our families, so it was important for it to happen. It's just to make a statement.
Hassan.
You know, first and foremost, I definitely want to say to my brothers, Muslim brothers and sisters who are preparing for this 30-day fast, Ramadan Mubarak. But, you know, I'm very encouraged, as Heber and Rhonda has said. You know, almost 10 years ago, me and Heber and Brother Faraji from EAA and Chantel, a whole lot of people were a part of the youth movement. And we felt at that time that we did certain things in order to help advance the cause of young people in this city and to protect the communities of Baltimore City. And I think that's what you saw on Friday night. I continuously, over these weeks and days of shootings and murders, kept saying, where's the outrage by the people, let alone the elected officials who seem to be absent during this time of crisis? But where's the outreach of the people, of the families? And I was more encouraged by it because it was the men. I know we're going to do women. I think Minister Paris and others are going to do women. But the men, the family structure of Baltimore is lacking. That's where we have to start, because no politician can fix that. No police department can fix that. We as men have to fix that as the head of the household, so to speak. And that's why I was so encouraged that so many people showed up. I just hope that it translates into, like Reverend Heber said, into a long-term outrage and attacks the problem in our communities.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to the phones, get some thoughts from our callers. And Donald, you're on the air.
The problem.
Donald, welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Welcome.
I feel good. I didn't attend the march. Wasn't going to attend the march. I mean, the Baltimore City public, Baltimore City Hall's sponsored march, which what it was. I've been around a long time. I've seen these before. And Mark, you probably have too, in this particular city, on these same issues of crime and violence within the community. What I find contradictory is that, and I think the mayor did a good, excellent job. She got the poor people to march on the poor people when the people should have been marching on her and the police. At the same time that they march, brothers marching with the police are jacking up black men all over the city every day and all day. And we don't draw a line to see that why the hood doesn't look good, because all the money is going downtown to development. And those kind of disparities, we seem to overlook that to get it, to involve ourselves in a march that does make us feel good that since we participated, we did something. As long as we do something, it sounds like Mary Pat Clark. If there's a bill that's coming up and it's a very controversial issue, she'll go through all the formalities of the pros and the cons, and that at the end of the conversation, she'll say, "Well, there was some good in it." See, we can't no longer settle for that. We should have been marching from south to north or north to south opposed to west to east, because we're going to see the blighting, we're going to see the crime going from north west North Avenue to east North Avenue. But when we take and look and see that the great disparities, it was no more than a big distraction. Because
okay.
Okay.
Let me let our guest comment. Heber?
Yeah, I think the caller makes a great point, particularly as it relates to how we tend to frame violence in Baltimore, how we tend to frame these issues. And we do frame them as a black issue. We frame them as an inner city issue. I think broadening the definition is important, or the understanding is important, because, yes, you can have a march in the streets, but there probably should also be a march in the suites of Baltimore, too, because if we think about violence beyond the degree of just interpersonal violence, I hit you, I cut you, right? If we think about violence in the way of not funding programs for youth in the city, why don't we think about that as violence? And if we think about all those types of things as violence as well, then the caller has a point that, you know, we could expand that march, and we should be clear about, you know, some of these areas of real concern, as he raised marching with the police department when there's issues there and there's corruption issues in the police department. And so I don't think we have to shy away from any of those issues. At the same time, I think that the organizers of this march from Friday, at least the ones I spoke to, did a really good job of not selling this is the end all be all, going to fix everything. I think they were very realist in the sense that they knew this would be an opportunity to raise awareness, opportunity to establish relationship with different organizations around the city. But by no means is this the finish line.
And I think one of the things that Bobby Holmes just wrote, my producers just texted in, that's not true. The march was not sponsored by the city. It was sponsored, in fact, by Munir Bahar, who is the head of Core Fitness and has been looking to end work around this violence issue for a long time. Though I don't dismiss everything Donald said about where the core of the problem lies and where people should look. And the city may have come in to take advantage or to participate, but this was a march organized independently by just men who are tired of seeing the violence in the community.
I think he got that from, because a co-organizer was Councilman Brandon Scott,
right.
And they allowed the city, the only female that spoke was the mayor. And so a lot of people felt that this was based off of the government doing it as opposed to a people outrage. When we saw the Trayvon Martin thing and all those hundreds and thousands of people that marched downtown and City Hall, that was a grassroots movement that came from the people. Now, unfortunately, it dealt with a young man who was killed in Florida as opposed to the ones we see right here in Baltimore.
Absolutely.
Right. But I do think that Donald makes a great point in the terms of, when you look at the war syndrome, when people go to Iraq and Afghanistan, they come back traumatized. And, you know, the VA and other people help them with that. I think we need to look at the mental health of our own people that deal with that, because you see this every day and it becomes a systemic problem in our communities beyond the other. I mean, look where the murders are. They're not happening in Roland Park. If you look at the thing, they're in three or four council districts that are predominantly African-American. And when we're not giving financial resources to churches like Reverend Brown's up in Northeast Baltimore or to rec centers in Park Heights, but all of it's going to Harbor Point, as I think we're going to speak about later on, there is a problem in fundamentally how the government is treating the city and the citizens of the city that I just don't think that was addressed on Friday.
Well, I feel that I'm a community advocate. So I'm, you know, I might not live in the inner city, but I'm right there in the city, 21215. And, you know, the march, I think, it needs to be commended. But the march should have been on Annapolis, because this is a trickle down from the prison problem, because it messed up the money on the street. So let's not forget what just happened in Baltimore City jails, and the streets are connected to the jails. And everything that the police are doing, I just shared with Hassan, that this is season 3 and 4 of The Wire. Everything that Bats is doing is taken right from this movie. So it's something that's already been done. There's nothing new creative going on. And I'm disappointed, like, for example, and not to pick on anyone, but like the councilman in the 7th District and his wife, who's running for state attorney, are happy with the police department, and they've got the most dangerous district in the city. I'm confused. But this is not about, oh, people are just going out here shooting people. Is a problem, and that problem stems from another problem. And that problem was what happened in the jails.
So let me even push a little further, because I think it might even extend beyond the jails. I'm going to talk about some of the policies that we talk about in the city before we move on. But let's go to the phones first. 410-319-8888, your thoughts. And Nzinga, you're on the air. Hi, Nzinga, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, welcome. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I wanted to say this. I'm an elder in the community, and I was elated to see all those strong men out there Friday night, because I'm going to tell you all something. They've been out there all the time. They're the brothers who go to work every day, take care of their families. We see them all the time, but it was such a joy to see all of them at one time, peaceful. Our young men won't know what a man is until they see one. And I saw that what the brothers did as an example. And I wanted to commend the sisters, too, who supported those brothers. So that's about all I have to say. It's a start. It's a much-needed start, and there's enough work to go around for everybody.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you, Nzinga. And you have a great day as well. And I think that what you said is right. Just that the mere presence of 600 men marching together down North Avenue is a statement that I think is important for people to see and hear. And that's just a statement of strength and commitment and power that people need to see. And it doesn't preclude marches on Annapolis and everywhere else. I just think that this showed a power that was important. But what is that? What do we do? How do you translate into policy?
Yeah.
Before we move on, I mean, one of the things I was thinking about was I was in between a couple of articles. There was an article written last week in the Sun about rec centers and closing rec centers. And there are a number of rec centers that are just closed permanently in neighborhoods like Harlem Park and the places where there have been spikes in violence, Crispus Attucks, Central Rosemont, Hilton, Harlem Park, fairly violent neighborhoods. Neighborhoods where a lot of violence has taken place. Those rec centers are closed forever. And in 1991, the city spent, this came out of the Sun, $8.7 million to operate 76 rec centers, and the budget for police then was $182 million. This year, the city will spend $10.6 million on rec centers and $324.9 million on the police. A piece by Daniel Webster from Hopkins today in the Sun, was it today? In yesterday's Sun, he wrote an op-ed. Interesting, we talk about what happened. One of the things he mentioned here was that in 2007, Police Commissioner Bielfeld started redirecting police from drugs to violent actors. The crime rate went down, as opposed to just going after drugs and trying to work with the community. And B, all of the research shows that Safe Streets, which is the program where ex-felons are in communities to stem the violence, there was not a spike in violence. We keep calling this a spike. I even hate using that word because it just kind of takes the context of human beings away from it. But a spike in violence, it didn't take place in any of those neighborhoods. Yet we underinvest in a program that takes men who have served time, women who have served time, who understand the streets and their communities, into community organizers, street therapists, ending violence, working with people. The question is where we invest our money.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And it shows the priorities. I mean, I read that same information this morning in terms of the investment in recreation centers compared to investment in law enforcement programs and the like. And it shows that in 22 years' time, from 1991 to now, not much has changed. And so I'm looking forward to a day when the state of emergency and the crisis language, our action matches our language. We're quick to call state of emergency in Baltimore and a whole bunch of stuff. But the reinvestment doesn't happen, the investment doesn't happen to the degree that we talk about emergencies. We talk about the communities where Safe Streets is operating and commend them. And you're right, always looking for more resource and support for that program and so many others that have shown to be effective in their own communities and in creative, non-traditional ways. But if you look at some communities where, as you said, spikes in crime are happening, I'd be curious to see if we were to overlay those communities and kind of put the graph over top of the unemployment rate in those communities and then put another layer let's show the food deserts in that region and then put another layer and let's show the lack of, like you said, recreation centers and just keep on doing that. And you'll begin to see that violence is not accidental, that it is intentional. And we're not ready yet because perhaps how things are right now is too beneficial to some people or some groups. It's too great. I mean, the checks are too large to really change things, because if we really were really serious about it, then you would see us being more strategic and synchronizing efforts to a greater degree.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at, like you said, politics is about the resources that you have and where you're going to allocate those resources. The police have always and continuously get more money than any other department, education, everything else. We invest more in public safety because that is the outcry of most of the constituency that votes. And so we put that money into these officers. And Mark, as you said, we had even at Genie Girls Visual last week, individuals who were running programs out of their own pocket, who were ex-felons, who were the ones who can speak. See, when you have these rallies and these protests, it's the usual suspects that come that aren't breaking the law. So where do you actually then begin to target the problem? You can't, because we're there. So what you have to do is go into these communities with people who can effectively communicate to those who are breaking the law. And the only way you can do that, if you speak to language as these young people, but instead of investing in programs and churches like Reverend Brown's and others who are doing great work in the community, who can really benefit, $500,000 will go a long way, I'm sure, to what you can do for the families in Northeast Baltimore throughout this city. It will go a long way for safe streets. But instead, we give that in overtime in 1 month to the police department. We have a problem in managing the money and the resources that are going downtown instead of uptown.
Let's go back to the phones here before we go back to Rendezvous Fest. Let me read this email that just came in from the Pastor Britt Marshall, who wrote in, "I have always attended many rallies and meetings as pastor, now retired, even to meeting JJ last February. I am always the only white pastor there, the only," he says, in exclamation points. "May I suggest the planners do demonstrations out in white man's country, where most Baltimore City clergy live. Your caller is white, right? We focus on poor black people where the rulers keep us focused. We need to be in the face of people like me. Whitey walks free."
Ouch.
So says Pastor Britt Marshall.
Well, thank you, Pastor. Well, my comment is I'm going to start with the rec centers, and I'm going to tie it with the water bills, poor performing schools, liquor stores, crime. It's all connected. It's all connected. And the reason it's connected is to cause harm to the most vulnerable residents, which is the underserved in Baltimore City. And that's for people to get fed up and move out. That's the reason. No money comes into Baltimore City or any other major city for rich people or well-off people or overserved people. It comes into communities for poor people. That's why HUD funding comes into the city, and Graziano admitted it during the budget hearing for housing, that the money is diverted. And so when money comes into neighborhoods like Oliver or down on Presbury Street, Matthew Henson community, you know, and they give them a little rec center and they have to say, "Thank you, Jesus, you gave me a rec center." They don't realize that the $100,000 they gave them was really $1 million, and that $1 million is now at Harbor Point. That's a fact. And that's why Baltimore City did not get the $4 million they usually get through housing this year. They got $400,000. And it's going to be less money because HUD knows that Baltimore City is doing the wrong thing for the money. But when you push people out of the city, you're causing the disparity that you see in crime. You're taking away from these neighborhoods, and you're not supporting the community or the families. Do children need rec centers? Absolutely. And if you get one, you shouldn't have to bend over backwards and thank God that you got a rec center and not ask for the rats to be removed. And that's what they have people doing, acting like you can't ask for anything else because you got a piece of a rec center. That's a crumb. That should be given.
That's a crumb.
That's a crumb.
Crumb. Right. I thought it's from
a
my
crumb. C-R-U-B is not a meal.
Got you.
It's a crumb.
It's like the slots revenue in Park Heights. They've been robbing Park Heights of $6 million per year. That's only $600,000 going to the community. The rest, where's it going?
And they're not telling them they're getting the money.
So we have to go very short break and come back. We have a lot of listeners writing in. We're going to talk about how Harbor Point fits into this and Carl Stokes' battle around that and what that means. 410-319-8888. Sandy and Reg, the next two callers up. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sometimes in
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Lean on Me, a little bit of what we're talking about here. Bill Withers talking to us back in 1972. I remind you, on our way to our conversation here, see if I have the right thing in front of me. Support for WEAA is provided by Bosch, offering Bosch dishwashers at your local Bosch retailer. And you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, here with Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, community activist Hassan Giordano, host of Reporters Roundtable, publisher of DMVDaily.com, and Rhonda Wimbish, who is a real estate broker, legislative chair for the Real Estate Brokers of Baltimore, and former candidate for city council. I get a feeling she may be a candidate again. You never know. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow at gmail.com. Let's get a quick thought on the phones here and come right back. And Sandy and Waverly, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Sandy.
Certainly, 600 men marching down North Avenue made a great political statement. But what if those same 600 men had been diverted to the most dangerous city council in this city, and they had scattered and taking resources to those guys where the apprenticeship programs are, where the training program is, where they can go to get help to get their GED? And further, what if those same 600 men had emailed or called those state senators, those city council people, and say the money's being diverted? Where is the money going that's supposed to come to these communities?
Interesting thought.
It makes a great point. You have, you know, at some point you want to save the world, but you have to do that piece by piece. And we learned that years ago. It's like you try to do things citywide, but you have to target things. And we know where the top two or three districts are, and that's what we're trying to work on with the NAACP criminal justice, is targeting those violent neighborhoods, those violent districts, one or two. Can't save the whole city at one time, because we know Roland Park, they ain't got the issues that Park Heights has. So we have to be focused, and we have to target the resources, because what most people don't realize is, where are the resources? When Jeannie Girl got shot, her family dealt with her cousin dying last year, but they still didn't know who to reach out to, what resources were there for them or the family. And that's information is vital in our neighborhood.
I think you shared some wisdom, Hassan, some wisdom that we've learned the hard way in coming up, that, you know, the temptation is to try to do everything in one shot. And you get a whole bunch of optimistic visionaries in a room, and by the end of the meeting, you have saved the world with your words, and you'll leave out, and it'll be a good thing if you get one thing done. So I applaud, you know, again, applaud those who organize it. I know that talks and meetings are continuing to happen, and so some of these ideas that are being stated may actually end up showing up in this effort, or many of the other efforts that the cameras didn't pick up and the newspapers didn't write about. But I agree with Hassan's sentiment in that I would at this point in whatever efforts that are happening, I'm trying to focus my energy right where I am. I pastor where I live, where I pastor. My children go to school in that community. I'm trying to be focused on North Baltimore, Northeast Baltimore, that area. And if I can partner with a fraction of the 600 just on that part of the community, I think that's a great thing. And if each of us took similar types of attitudes where this is my corner, this is my block, this is my community, okay, and then we strategically organize and say, okay, I know Rhonda got over here. She got that. And when she blows the trumpet for something big, then we'll rush over there. Until that time, we're right here. So I think that can be a strategic way, and perhaps the organizers, Brother Munir and Brother Bobby and others, would think about ways to strategically do that. But can I just push back against one piece really quickly?
Sure.
Because I think that even the Roland Parks of the world need this type of organizing and advocacy as well, because some of the decisions that are made in those communities impact the communities that we are lifting up as crime-ridden and crime-laden. And so I don't give a pass to no community in Baltimore. I think the pastor who sent the email in is exactly right. Whitey been writing Walking Free too long. I'm with you, Pastor. And so if this is a shared struggle, let's share it then.
Right.
It shouldn't be just black men walking. Where are the white brothers walking out there in Hampton and every other place in Federal Hill? So that it can really be a citywide initiative and effort.
Absolutely.
We all play a part in the problem. We all should play a part in the solution.
And let me go with the phones here real fast, because people are calling in. I want to get some thoughts. Someone has a thought who was on that march. Reminding that part of this conversation, we'll get into more later in the week, but we can do some today, is that Harbor Point with their $88 million, Carl Stokes was right when he said, and people are angry when I said this the other day, but I'll say it again, that we have to question why that district was widened to include public housing, Perkins Homes. That there's no reason for that to be in that district, so they can get this tax credit for impoverished districts And we're not talking about the fact that this is also being built on top of a toxic dump. Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking about that either. Mm-hmm. And so there are all these issues here around this development that I think that where power speaks to power, money speaks to money in this city. And I think that has to be challenged, especially in light of what these men are saying to us the other night, Friday night. But let's go to the phones. 410-319-8888. Derek and Guilford, you're on the air. Hi, Derek. You're on the air. Welcome. Derek, you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, I need to turn my phone down. I'm sorry.
That's right. I mean,
yes. How you doing, Mark, first and foremost?
Very well. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I am Derek Chase from Park Heights, presently living in Guilford. And what I would like to say, Mark, is sometimes when we see those marches or those shows or those demonstrations of strength, we have a tendency to think that that is what we're doing. In reality, that is a symbol for what a lot of those brothers are already doing. That was a call to power of men who are currently working in the community to reduce the violence. We just don't necessarily get a platform to talk about it. Those were not just men who are in need of GED trainings. These are professionals. These are business owners. These are property owners. These are the men who have a stake in the community who, again, are coming together because we don't get an opportunity to really to talk to each other to find out what one another is doing to reduce this violence.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that that is a piece of it. These are men who are involved in the lives of their families and communities who got up and said, this is the way we have to walk. And I think that the pastor's right and the pastor in the studio is right that this has to be a march of 6,000 men through the streets of Baltimore, black and white, and every other hue, to make a statement about the kind of community you want. But that has to be translated into political power as well if we're going to make changes in this community. Real quick call, then we'll come back to our guests. Reg, you're on the air. Reg in Baltimore, welcome. You're on the air. Is Reg there? Reg, you on the air? Are you with us? All right, one more shot, then we'll go back to our panel. Reg, you there? All right, we'll hold Reg on. We'll see if he's there. Don't know what happened. See the phone. Hassan or Ron, you about to say something?
Well, I think that when we look at the police department and we're talking about crime and, you know the thing with Perkins Square, which, you know, you're just talking about disparity. And, you know, that's a serious word. It's a serious word because some people who don't feel as worthy act out on it. And that's real. But when you look at the police department, and I always look at resolutions, I don't like just to have a complaint. I think there needs to be a community advocate, maybe one of those 600 black men, to sit in on those private police department meetings. Because there is a divide between the police on the street and the upper decorated officers, the chiefs and the deputies. So we have low morale all over the city, fire department, police department, city workers, residents, you know, commuter versus residents. You know, you come into the city every day, Mr. Steiner, and I feel some sort of way about you being able to commute into Baltimore City and have a living, and I've got to pay for it. And but those kind of things, we've got to figure out, what are we going to do with this divide? We have a community that's getting ready to be divided in Park Heights, upper Park Heights versus lower Park Heights. You're talking about there's no crime in Roland Park. We're just talking about one street that divides crime and Park Heights. Mm-hmm. This is divide. Divide is not going to be good. It's going to cause an angry day that we don't want to see.
Well, I think the angry day is already here. People are already angry about what's going on in the city.
And like Brother Derek said, you know, I have an opportunity. It's these hidden gems that we don't see. We know in communications that the Sun and other outlets are going to put the people they want to put up front. And a lot of things aren't going to get translated. And a lot of people don't want to be out front doing it. Derek Chase, Derek Compton, I've known them for years, have been doing great work in the city of Baltimore. You don't hear about it, though, because that's not their platform. That they're not. But we have to at some point. That's why, really, I created DMV Daily as an outlet for a voice of people to get on there, promote what they're doing, be citizen journalists. And we, at some point, like Reverend Brown said, is we all have to be connected to a point that we're not selfishly doing the work on our own, but we are a community within ourselves that when we're selfishly doing in our community, we're also providing a lending hand to those in the Roland Parks, the Park Heights, and everywhere else in this city for it to be, because, you know, we have to be interconnected. That's what we are. We're a city of neighborhoods. And at some point, we got to be that.
But all that things we just heard are true. But the problem is, I think, Reverend Brown, that we don't have the political vehicle or will to make the change. There's no unity in the standing up to power. There's a lot of people talking about it, mm-hmm. but very little organization and unity.
Yeah, and I think many reasons for it, many factors, I think, for that. One, I think, I feel like someone may have mentioned this earlier, but so looking to the official halls of political power is probably not the first step you want to make. And then number two, when you talk about the lack of unity, I think to some degree that might be some pride issues, that might be some territorial issues to some degree, but also to another degree is because people are just busy. So if I'm working a full-time job in addition to, I mean, think about it. You had 600-some brothers. Those brothers got lives and families and jobs and things to do.
Which is why it was a Friday night and not a Tuesday night.
Which is why it was a Friday night. Right. I mean, and so I think we have to think about that along those lines.
Right.
There's no, when you think about people like Fannie Lou Hamer, you think about, you know, all these great organizers, Ella Baker and so many others, organizers, Dr. Y.T. Walker and the like, They didn't have the luxury of calling time out to their lives so that they can go over and help address some serious issues. Sister Wimbush here doesn't have the luxury of saying, time out. I gotta stop all this other stuff that I need to do, because if I don't do it, I'm not gonna eat. I'm not gonna have a roof over my head. No, it's people who sacrifice. And so when you talk about the issue of not having the degree of organization that we need. There might be a whole lot of issues there, but also it might be just because people don't have the time. I'm so busy doing the work, I don't have the time to do that. And so maybe there are others who take on that charge of helping to organize and bring together a grassroots network of just people who are working together and utilizing these tools like Facebook and Twitter, using them bad boys to organize to a greater degree the way we need to be. But for right now, the lack of unity and the lack of organization is a boon and benefit to those who are being rewarded handsomely because of the fractured status of those who want to do something great.
Let me get a call in here before we have to move on. Will, you're on the air from Park Heights. Will?
Yes.
You're on the air. We got a few minutes left, so go ahead. Will, you're on the air. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Morning. I wanted to go to sentiments of some of the callers, primarily Brother Chase, something, and Hassan and Ron. One of the things that we understand that happens in our neighborhoods and communities is, as the pastor was saying, was that lack of bringing people together. And what we're seeing now is, I can tell you, I participated in March on Friday, and at the end of that march, after that 10 miles, going from Hilton to Milton, after that 10 miles, what you saw was a sense of unity from a lot of people. And I know there's a lot of criticism about...
Oh, man.
I don't know what happened with our phones. I apologize, Will, but let's get on the phone when we let's talk today. I'm going to hear what you have to say, and we'll come back to this and get your voice on the air about this. I'm going to hear what you have to say. And we also had some things coming on Facebook I just saw that we can't get into either. But so we'll come back to it later in the week. Herman Williams III wrote in, I'm going to read what he has to say, some pretty controversial things about this march as well, and about the violence. So we'll get to that. I want to thank our guests who were here today. It's always great to have Rhonda Wimbush in the studio. Welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Reverend Heber Brown.
Thank you.
It's been too long. It's good to have you in the studio.
It is. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
And good luck on everything you're doing.
Yes, sir.
Your church,
your
community, your family, your thesis.
Trying. Yes, sir. A lot on the plate.
A lot on your plate. And Hassan Giordano, always great to have you in. Thanks for being the advocate you are.
No problem.
The stuff you do in our community. Mm-hmm. And for bringing King Malik with you, as usual. Mm-hmm. Good to have him in the studio with us. He's so busy on his iPhone, he doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
He's tweeting out the interview as we're talking.
That's what he's doing. Look at him.
Rising up the young people.
Thank the three of you so much for being with us. And thank all of you for calling in and getting into this conversation. We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to switch gears to look at what national and international news happened since we've been gone, starting with the Trayvon Martin trial, an analysis of that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.